On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
The Maple Leafs are setting records. The Edmonton Oilers are clinching a playoff spot, and the Vancouver Canucks are losing because that is what they do. Welcome to the Unforced Errors Podcast. We started this last summer when times were, there's a lot less going on in the summer in the sports world. Harder to get a co-host in sometimes. So we started, you and me together, just the two of us, the Unforced Errors Podcast, and we have reached number 50. Thank you for sticking around. My name, you probably know by now, Matt Robinson. Really appreciate you joining us. This one was not planned. I've been in the studio for quite a while now, have just finished recording two episodes of Tall Can Sports with Captain Blowhard himself. Those, well, I should be careful. One of them is available right now. Tall Can Sports number 120 is available right now on tallcanaudio.com and on your favorite podcast app. We talk mainly hockey. Lots going on there, and you can jump in on that. We did a second show. That is a Blue Jays season kind of tee-up as they head into their final weekend of spring training baseball, that taking place, for some reason, in Montreal. And then they prepare for the season opener on Monday in Baltimore. That will be available on Friday. In the meantime, Captain Blowhard shot out of here. I was sitting around editing. I threw the Leaf game up on the big screen while I was plugging away at those shows, getting them ready for you to enjoy, hopefully. And while I was doing so, watched the Toronto Maple Leafs game. Florida Panthers. Curtis McElhaney in goal. This won't be a long show. But it seemed like a good time to check in on the boys. For those of you who are not Leaf fans, beat it. This will be all Toronto Maple Leafs. And like I said, it won't be a long show, but this will be pretty Toronto-centric, as some of these shows tend to be. If that's not your thing, I might suggest you check out Talk and Sports 120 or, you know, anything but this. So I'll give you guys a second to get the hell out of here, if you're going to do so.
Shame. Shame.
And the losers are gone. Those of you who have stuck around are the chosen ones. And congratulations on being just that. Curtis McElhaney, a little, I don't know, concerning going into this one. A Tuesday night against the Florida Panthers for a decade now has been a good reason to go out and not watch the Toronto Maple Leafs. It was going to mean nothing. Both teams were trash. Especially at this point in the season, there was nothing to see. At this point, the Leafs in a battle for a playoff spot. Frederik Andersen sitting out. There's been a lot of reports flying around as to what exactly is going on there. Was it a shoulder injury? Was it a head injury? There's been some talk that he got hit in the jaw. One thing is for sure, that for both of the last two seasons, he has missed time for things that he doesn't want to call a concussion, but that kind of look like concussions. One was jaw, specifically. One was an upper body injury. The head, for most of us, is on the upper body. And so that could fit there. He doesn't like to talk about it. Curtis McElhaney draws in. He's a good backup, ain't he? And you know what? He's a little unconventional at times. It's not always pretty. He did the job tonight. The Leafs also did the job tonight. At one point, I haven't seen the final shots, but within the last couple of minutes, they had held the Florida Panthers to 22. The Panthers had also held the Leafs to 22. But that's a pretty good way to protect your backup goalie. At the end of the game, it probably means you've kept the opposition under 25. Like I said, there was about 3 or 4 minutes left, and they didn't give up a ton late. Jaromir Jagr, yeah, he scores again in the last minute to make it a one-goal game. And I was talking to my old man not too long ago, and I don't really have the same memories of this that he does. I know it's true because the numbers back it up. But he said it was like, he remembers Jagr, especially in the late 90s, mid 90s, it being a nightmare when he played against Toronto. And so you go back and I take a look at the numbers and they bring it up again tonight on the broadcast. He had 78 points in 64 games against Toronto. That's disgusting. That's a good player. And that's a player who loved coming into Toronto, loved the big media market, loved knowing he was going to be on national television, and has owned the Toronto Maple Leafs. A lot like Alex Ovechkin has done over the years. And a couple other superstars that just, you know, dig the big stage. And so as this is going on, and then they're regaling us with these numbers at the time, 78 points in 64 games, I send my old man a text and just said, man, your memory doth not deceive you. Those are disgusting numbers. And within like 5 minutes of sending that text message, Jagr scores again, 79 points in 64 games. Okay. If you could go ahead and retire just about any time now, that would be awesome. Anytime before we see you again. So Jaromir Jagr continuing to get it done at 117 years old against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Kudos to him, I suppose. A couple other things to get to here on the Leafs front. Before we do that, this big victory that keeps the Maple Leafs ahead of the Bruins, who also won this evening, comes on a night where something else pretty notable has happened in the National Hockey League, something we haven't seen since 1989-90. The Detroit Red Wings are eliminated from the playoffs. They will not qualify. They have qualified, as I said, every single year since 1989-90 season for the playoffs. They will not this year. You know why? Guess why? Guess what happened? Guess why? The fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs won tonight is what eliminated the mighty Detroit Red Wings, or the once mighty Detroit Red Wings, from the playoffs. They are less mighty lately, it would seem. I can remember when the National Hockey League a couple of years ago redid the playoff system and set up these divisions this way. I can remember publicly stating on our Twitter account, I, for one, would like to welcome our new Red Wing overlords to the Atlantic Division, as that was a team no one wanted. It was much better to see them stay in the Central and not have to deal with them very often. They were perennial powerhouses, perennial playoff team, and that is just no longer the case. They have fallen off. The only thing worse than the fact that they will not be making the playoffs this year is their cap situation moving forward, as they are married to some terrible contracts that will not allow them to rebuild like great teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs have done. It takes some time. You have to be able to deal away those contracts. You have to be able to wait for some of them to expire, and half of them have been just signed. They are this bad now, and some of these contracts are only a year old. So not only will the Detroit Red Wings be missing the playoffs this season, they will be missing the playoffs for the foreseeable future. And it's interesting, as you look forward at the Atlantic Division, it's going to be good and it's going to get better. Carey Price is a Montreal Canadian for at least one more season. I imagine he'll re-sign, but they got to show him something that it's worth hanging around for, right? It's worth staying in Montreal. And right now, I don't think he's sold on that. I think they'll find a way. But right now, that's not. But look at everything else. Look at what Toronto's building. And we have looked at that enough, so I'm not going to build it up. Safe to say, the Maple Leafs look like they're going to be good for a while. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Holy crap. They are good now. They are charging hard for a playoff spot, and I wish they'd go away. They don't seem to want to. And that is without Steven Stamkos, who will return next year. They will be a force again. The Florida Panthers, everyone expected this season, would be terrific. They have not been. They battled injuries for a long time. They are still battling some of them right now. And they have fallen off, and essentially this loss tonight to Toronto will eliminate them at least from any reasonable chance of catching a division spot, and they would have to go absolutely crazy to catch a wild card spot, as Boston also won this evening. So things get tougher there for them for sure, but they will be good. When you look at Huberto and Barkov and Ekblad and still having Luongo, right? This is a very good team, Nicholas Bjugstad. Man. So the Atlantic Division is going to get better, and the Red Wings are not. So unbelievable to think that the Red Wings 27-year streak is over. And it was ended by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Awesome. Awesome. As I mentioned, the first time the Detroit Red Wings made the playoffs to start this streak was 89-90. Something else happened in the spring of 1990. A little thing, you may have heard of it. The World Wide Web was launched. So we're talking about something that happened a little while ago. Good night to the Detroit Red Wings, who will not be participating in the playoffs this year. I guess we'll be missed. I'm sure their fans are not overly disappointed. Most of their hardcore fans understand that this was coming. And it probably makes it a little easier when in these 20-some-odd years that they've been making the playoffs, they've won 4 Stanley Cups in that streak. That's pretty good. Maybe this would be difficult if they hadn't won any Stanley Cups in that streak. You could ask St. Louis what it's like to have a long playoff streak where you win no cups. But the Red Wings don't have to worry about that. They have gotten 4 of them. So that's pretty good. Tonight, I mentioned off the top, I mentioned a few things. The Edmonton Oilers clinching a playoff spot, looking pretty good. Toronto Maple Leafs setting a record, looking pretty good. The Vancouver Canucks are losing, at least at time of recording, and that's just what they do, and to me that looks pretty good. The record set tonight, Austin Matthews scores his 35th goal of the season as a rookie. That surpasses Wendell Clark's mark of 34, set in 1985. Wendell is a very popular Leaf, held the record for a long time, and Austin Matthews is now king of rookie goal scoring in Toronto, passing other such luminaries as Jeff Ware and Brendan Convery and Lonnie Bahanas, Alexander Suglobov. Remember that guy? Yeah, he's got more than Suglobov. Can you believe it? I jest a little bit. But we are talking about a 100-year-old franchise, and Austin Matthews is now the single rookie goal-scoring leader for the franchise. That's nothing to sneeze at. And in the post-game interviews, he was very humble. That's kind of the thing that he's been known for doing here lately. He's got a great personality, but most of these NHLers do. They don't want to rock the boat too much. They just kind of, it's a tremendous honor to even be mentioned in the... In his post-game interview, he says Wendell Clark is a great Maple Leaf, and to even be mentioned alongside him is a tremendous honor. That's what NHLers say. I have a question for you. Austin Matthews is a 19-year-old kid who grew up in Arizona. How much do you think he really knows about Wendell Clark? How much do you think he particularly cares about Wendell Clark? I like Wendell. If you're a Leaf fan, you probably like Wendell. Austin Matthews is saying the right things. I bet you he doesn't give a shit about Wendell Clark. And that's not to shit on Matthews. That's not to shit on Clark. But what does he care? He grew up, believe it or not, he was a Coyotes fan. But he would know all the top players in the National Hockey League. But you're talking about a kid who was born in the late 90s. Wendell's best years were long behind him. And even if they weren't, Austin Matthews was not watching the Toronto Maple Leafs on a regular basis. His agent would have told him what he needs to know. He'd have picked up a little bit via osmosis from being around the Toronto Maple Leaf franchise for the last year or so. All these sorts of things. But I'm telling you, he's saying the right things here. He doesn't really give two shits about Wendell Clark. And maybe he shouldn't. Wendell Clark and Doug Gilmore and guys like that that I love, and if you're kind of similar to my age, maybe you love as well, they didn't do anything. They didn't win anything. I'm a huge Matt Sundin fan. I'm a huge Curtis Joseph fan. Those are guys that were kind of in my, you know, later teens as I was becoming a huge fan. They didn't do anything. They didn't win anything. They created some awesome memories. They also created some pretty difficult ones of the team being eliminated. Anyone who likes to talk about the glory days of 93 and 94 because the team made it to the conference final and then scoff at the later teams that made it to the same conference finals in 99 and 02, what's the difference? Why is that team of the early 90s held in so much higher regard than the later one? That Pat Quinn team, that Curtis Joseph team, that Matt Sundin team. Two conference finals, exact same as what the early 90s did. Well, we all prefer Dougie over Matt's, and we really liked Wendell and those, and that's all fine, and that's all well and good, and I'm not really here to have a debate over which of those teams was better, but it is interesting to me that as these debates roar on, or as these discussions roar on, we talk an awful lot about 93, 94, and almost nothing about 99 and 2002. I guess it's painful to relive losing to the goddamn Carolina Hurricanes. One last thing to get to here on this one. A really interesting thing that you don't see every day. Roman Polak was being assessed a penalty, 2 minutes high sticking, to a Panthers player. I believe, and I could be wrong now, it doesn't really matter to the point of the story, but I believe it was Jonathan Huberdeau. If it wasn't, you'll forgive me, but it doesn't particularly matter here. The problem with that penalty call is that replays on TV and in the building are showing all the fans watching and the coaching staff of both teams and whatever else and their little iPads and screens that they've got on the bench. Roman Polak never high-sticked the Panthers player. The Panthers player was hit in the face with the puck. Now, Polak's lifting his stick up. As it happens, the head snaps back because your head also would snap back if it was smacked in the face with a frozen puck. And so it all looks like it could have been a high stick, but it was not at any point a high stick. So the two referees and the linesmen get together and they start talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. They decide, yep, high stick. And the crowd in the building who has already seen the replay on the big screen is losing their mind, just like most of us fans watching at home, going, yeah, this is a problem because that's pretty clear cut, not a penalty. So they gather up Roman Polak and they're putting him in the box. The crowd's losing it. And one of the linesmen happens to get a look at the play again. Now, they are not allowed to have instant replay on penalties. You can challenge a lot of things. You can challenge goalie interference. You can challenge offside. You can ask for video review on whether the puck crossed the line. Things like that, right? You can challenge a play, but a penalty call is not one of them. The referee has to have final call on that, and they are not to use video review. Because, you know, in Gary's NHL, why have evidence? Just call whatever the fuck you want. So long before the refs make any kind of decision here, everyone but them knows what has actually happened. And they are still going ahead and putting Roman Polak in the box. Not cool. The crowd is booing and whatever. And so, like I say, one of the linesmen gets a look at it. It's unclear at this point whether or not he got... it's tough down on the ice. When you see how big the scoreboards are in these buildings and you're down on the ice, especially if you're near center ice or something like that, you look up and it's just right there. You can't necessarily see what's on it. But there's a ton of screens now on the benches. People don't realize it's tablets and they got little TV screens and whatever so that these coaches can decide whether they're going to challenge things. Assistant coaches and staff can be looking at different things. One of the linesmen gets another look at this and goes, that's a fucking puck hitting him in the face. It's not a stick. They bring everybody back together and they talk about it again and now decide it's not a penalty. And now the Panthers coaching staff is losing their minds because that's not allowed. You are not allowed to, you know, get a second opinion, get evidence and decide that's not actually a penalty. You have to stick to your call, even if it's wrong. So the Panthers actually have a leg to stand on here. The Panthers are correct. And this is the thing about Gary's NHL. Gary's NHL would rather have you make a bad decision and stick to it when the entire world except you knows it was wrong rather than just get it right. Now, I'm not saying that the NHL should be able to review every penalty and overturn every ref's decision. You shouldn't necessarily be able to challenge a tripping call. The game would take forever. But this isn't supposed to happen. And so it's one of those rare situations where the refs broke the rules. Okay, they ended up making the right call. Roman Polak should not have been assessed a penalty. He never high-sticked anyone. But the Florida Panthers also get to be pissed and go, you don't get to change your mind. You called that a high stick. Now, roles reversed. Obviously, the Panthers would be furious if their guy was put in the box and he never did anything. That's sports, right? That's a competitive environment. But they're not wrong here. The NHL rulebook says, no, make a bad decision and live with it. And that might seem like an oversimplification, but it's not. You're not allowed to go back and find another way to look at that and then change your mind. You make the call and you stick with it. So this shouldn't have happened. The Leafs got lucky that this was overturned, even though the guy was not guilty. They should have had to kill that penalty in, at the time, what was still a tight game. So, man, Panthers fans, Panthers staff, they're not happy. And you know what? As dumb as it sounds, they are correct. They are right. That referee made a bad call, and he shouldn't have had the opportunity to overturn it. Now, in any normal semblance of reality, any logical human being would say, well, that's stupid. Let's just get it right. But that's not Gary's NHL. That's not how we do things. Roman Polak was interviewed after the game, and he said he thanked the official because you never see them overrule themselves. You never see them overturn their own call. He said the referee just told him, yeah, we made a mistake. Let's get this right. And all of that seems totally reasonable. But he was wrong, and he's going to be reprimanded by the league, which is just unbelievable to me. So, Leafs get 2 points, jump back ahead of the Bruins, who had overtaken them earlier in the evening. They are now at 87. Most people seem to believe it's going to take somewhere around 93, 94 points to get in to the playoffs. So the Leafs need probably 3 more wins out of 7 more games. Seems doable. You could get a couple of those points in overtime losses. The Leafs have plenty of those to go around. They are on their way to Nashville for a game on Thursday night. They still have games against Buffalo and Tampa. Those are division games. Tampa's still in the race. They're going to finish up against Washington, Pittsburgh, and Columbus, which is murderer's row. So they better get their business done before that rolls around. You better be comfortably in a spot because it's going to be tough to come across points there. Those teams will still be battling for position in that Metro division. A lot of times you can kind of bank on really good teams being home and cooled and wanting to rest their guys. In that division, you want to finish first. You want to play the Rangers. You finish second, you're going to be stuck playing one of those big three. So none of those teams are going to be resting guys late. You're going to have to beat them at full strength or you're going to have to beat some lesser lights before you get there. And that seems like probably the better strategy. Nashville is a tough game on the road on Thursday. No word as yet whether or not Freddie Anderson will be back in for that. And then, yeah, we're back at it. You got Detroit, and I think it's Detroit on Saturday. I think that's Toronto's last visit to the Joe. We'll see about that. But we'll wrap this one up, I think. This was all Leaf talk. Big victory. Twitter is alive, talking about all kinds of things on a night where the Leafs win and eliminate the Detroit Red Wings indirectly. But we're going to enjoy that. That has been Unforced Errors number 50, and we will see you on the next one. Make sure you check out Tall Can Sports 120 dropping, well, it's out right now. Lots of hockey talk there, too, with myself and Rob Christie. We will see you all on the next one. My name's Matt Robinson. Thanks for listening.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.